It's fun to hear about the different gifts that you guys have given. One of my favorite aspects about giving gifts is the presentation. You can really build the excitement with a good presentation. For instance, a few years ago, we got my son Ollie a bike for Christmas. And instead of just popping a bow on the bike and putting it in front of the tree on Christmas morning, we created a scavenger hunt of clues. The gift under the tree that he opened to begin it was a paintbrush. And it instructed him on there that he was to hunt for his gift. And on the paintbrush were instructions to put the paintbrush in its proper place where he would find the next clue. In the storage room where we kept the paintbrush, he found another wrapped gift, a box of dryer sheets, with instructions on it to put it in its proper place where he would find the next clue. If you don't know me, I like cleaning up, so I was having him help me clean up as he did the hunt. In the laundry room, he found another wrapped gift. It was a bike helmet, and on it were instructions to put it in its proper place where he would find his gift. In the garage, he went and hung up the helmet where it belonged, walked straight past the gift, and then turned around and was like, and so we're all pointing at the bike. And he was so excited, he jumped on the bike and rode it straight out of the garage down the driveway. Sometimes the adventure in the journey to the gift intensifies the impact. In our final week of the Wonder of Christmas series, we find ourselves in the midst of the greatest scavenger hunt of all time, the Magi, in search of the new king. Let's read about it in Matthew. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born king of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod called to the Magi in secret and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me, so that I too may go and worship him." After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. The Magi's scavenger hunt started with a star, or a star-like object. Their first clue was in the sky, which makes sense as they were students of the stars. Unlike many Christmas songs, stories, and scenes depict, the Magi were likely not kings. They were Eastern astrologers. Magi is the plural of the Latin word magus. The original Greek word, magos, was rooted in reference to a Persian priestly caste of the religion Zoroastrianism, which I looked up the phonetic pronunciation of. The Magi studied the stars and attributed religious significance to their movement. So it makes sense that their attention was caught by a star. They interpreted this star to coincide with the birth of a new king for the Jews. The next clue. So they went to the most likely place to find a king of the Jews, Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. When they were there, they interacted with the current king, Herod. We'll get back to him in a few minutes. And after conferring with the chief priests and teachers of the law for the prophecies, Herod sent them to Bethlehem. Much to their great delight, the star they had seen at the Messiah's birth reappeared and led them to the house of the Christ child, where they worshiped him. Of the four Gospels, Matthew is the only place we find anything about the Magi. There are a few things we learn here that run contrary to our Christmas traditions. For instance, the Magi were not part of the nativity scene. They did not come the night of his birth along with the shepherds. Based on the timing of when they first saw the star, Jesus could have been 2 years old by that time. Furthermore, with the dates of King Herod the Great's reign and death, it seems that Jesus may have been born as far back as the year 4 BC, which doesn't make sense and seems as if somebody might have messed up on their numbering at some point. But really, the lack of details in Matthew's account sometimes leaves us with more questions than answers. Like, who were the Magi? Are their names Melchior, Caspar, and Balthazar? Were there only three of them, or were there 12 of them? Or was there a great caravan of them? Where exactly did they come from? What about the star? Was it a star, or a comet, or a supernova? Was it the triple alignment of Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars? Or was it completely supernatural and unexplainable? What was the significance in the gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh? Were they medicinal? Or were they all gifts fit for a king? Was there deeper meaning behind the gifts? Did the gold represent kingship, frankincense, deity, and myrrh, mortality? Or was it gold for virtue, frankincense for prayer, and myrrh for suffering? Were they used to fund the family's escape to Egypt? Each of the five different commentaries that I read in preparation for this contained multiple and conflicting ideas about these things, about the origin of the Magi, the nature of the Star of Bethlehem, and the meaning and the gifts. Lots of questions and lots of opinions. Some steeped in symbolism and prophecy, some with more evidence than others, but all of them are guesses. It's fun to explore and consider all the theories on the specifics, but perhaps Matthew was vague in his details because the details were insignificant to the point that he was trying to make. In my experience with this passage, it's easy to get lost in the weeds of the details and miss the message. The proverbial, don't miss the forest for the trees. When I take a step back and look at the bigger picture, what Matthew was trying to communicate to his original Jewish audience, there are two broad stroke ideas that stand out to me. The gospel of Jesus is for everyone, and the gospel of Jesus elicits a response. Up to this point, everyone in the nativity story has been expectedly Jewish. Matthew begins with the lineage of Christ, rooting him in the kingly Jewish line of David. Mary and Joseph were faithful Jews. The shepherds, Elizabeth, Zechariah, all good Jews, then enter the Magi. Not only are they not Jews, they are likely priests of Zoroastrianism, an Eastern religion that practiced astrology. A practice that was controversial to Jewish law at best, but mostly forbidden as paganism and heathenism. What's more is that the Magi found Jesus through this forbidden practice. All of this would have been shocking to the Jewish people Matthew was speaking to, people who had from their beginning been instructed to keep away from other religions. They were the chosen people. Outsiders could, through a long process of rituals, convert, but even then, they would never have been considered as pure. Matthew was suggesting that the doors to God were being thrown wide open. The good news was not just for the Jews. God had revealed himself to the Magi, non-Jews, in the stars, a revelation to the Gentiles, an epiphany. And the Magi didn't have to go through a long process of rituals to approach Jesus, to make themselves right or clean before the law. They came as they were. The filter of the law was being dissolved in this baby. The gospel of Jesus is for everyone, and the invitation is to come as you are. For the Jews, this would have been news that rocked their world. All the work they'd done to stay right before the law, the mindset of insiders and outsiders, blown away. For us, this ought to be news that rocks our world. The visit of the Magi was symbolic of God opening the invitation to all who seek him, and Jesus would continue living and teaching this message. The prerequisites and exclusions have been removed. The gospel of Jesus is for everyone. The gospel of Jesus, his life, death, and resurrection, his personification of love in action, his mercy and grace in the form of undeserved love, his work of reconciliation in the form of self-sacrificing love. It's for everyone. It's for me. It's for you. It's for all who seek him. And as difficult as this was for the Jews to grasp and embrace, I think that we can sometimes experience a similar sentiment when we start forming our own prerequisites and exclusions to the gospel and become self-appointed enforcers of our self-created filters. In the name of religiosity, we turn people away. Jesus came for all who choose to seek him, particularly the lost. We ought not stand in the way of Jesus. The gospel of Jesus is for everyone, and it elicits a response. It says in Matthew 2 that when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed. Other versions say troubled, deeply disturbed, alarmed, upset, stirred, greatly agitated. Herod's response to the news of the Jews, the news of Jesus, was certainly not positive. This was King Herod the Great. The early part of his reign was marked with great accomplishments, but his desire for power and control soon took over, and fear of losing his power and position governed his choices. Eventually, he even executed his wife and two sons. He became a paranoid and brutal ruler, and anything that stood in his way, he eliminated. You can see this fear in his actions following the news of the baby king of the Jews. He schemed to learn where the child was by inquiring of the chief priests and teachers of the law to learn the location of the birth from the prophecies, Bethlehem. Then he schemed to learn the age of the child by going to the Magi in secret to find out the exact date the star appeared. And finally, he instructed them to come back to him with details. His plan was to find the child and kill him, eliminate the threat. What he didn't account for was God's hand in the matter. The Lord spoke to the Magi in a dream, warning them not to go back to Herod. So Herod was left in his fear, and he took it to the next level. In Matthew 2, it goes on to say, when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. Herod took the two pieces of information that he had, the location of Bethlehem and the age of around 2, and eliminated any that fit as a potential threat. Fear drove him. Thanks be to God that his hand never left Jesus. The text goes on to say, when they had gone, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said. Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there till I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. Jesus was spared, and the good news continued. And it elicited fear in Herod. In his mind, the gospel of Jesus was a threat to his power. For there to be a new king, Herod would have to choose to submit himself to Jesus. And in his drive for status preservation, he chose to fight it. He clung to what he had, he grasped for control, and it led him to great sin. Interestingly, the gospel of Jesus elicited a response of fear in the Jewish people as well. It says, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. But they were afraid for different reasons, and their fear led them to different responses. Commentator D.A. Carson says, in contrast with the Magi's desire to worship the King of the Jews, Herod is deeply troubled. In this, all Jerusalem joins him, not because most of the people would have been sorry to see Herod replaced or because they were reluctant to see the coming of the King Messiah, but because they well knew that any question like the Magi's would result in more cruelty from the ailing Herod, whose paranoia had led him to murder his favorite wife and 2 sons. After reading about King Herod's tyrannical ways, I can understand how his feeling deeply troubled would cause the people of Jerusalem to feel deeply troubled as well. And it turned out, with King Herod's response to being outwitted by the Magi, that their troubledness was well warranted, as all of their baby boys were killed. In their minds, the threat to their immediate safety and relative comfort overrode the eternal impact of the new king, and their fear of their present circumstances won over their hearts. It distracted them from realizing the fullness of who Jesus was and drove their responses. Matthew doesn't give us any more details about the people of Jerusalem. We don't hear anything else from them. Their role in the story was passive at best. But in reality, I think that their fear paralyzed them and they did nothing. I think many of us could identify with paralyzing fear. It wasn't that the people of Jerusalem hated Jesus or that they wanted to see the child killed. It was that the news of Jesus elicited fear in the people of Jerusalem. Their comfort and safety was at stake. And in the moment, submitting to a new king, shifting their alliance, seemed too great a risk. So they stuck with the status quo and tried their best to fly under the radar. The immediate outweighed the eternal. They couldn't see past their own circumstances, and the fear paralyzed them. And while the people of Jerusalem passively waited for the next shoe to drop, the Magi actively and earnestly sought the one born King of the Jews. And they only knew in part who Jesus would be. They didn't even know the fullness of the gospel, that Jesus came to rescue the world from itself, that with his death, he would reconcile people to God. They only had what God showed them in the stars and the clues that they picked up along the way. And for them, that was enough to spark their curiosity, to build their anticipation, to grow their wonder. Herod informed them that the baby would have been born in Bethlehem, a mere 5 miles from Jerusalem. After their long journey, only another hour and 45 minutes of walking, they were almost there. It says, after they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. Overjoyed. Some of the other translations of the Bible say they were overjoyed beyond measure, overwhelmed with joy, ecstatic with joy, filled with intense joy. They rejoiced with exceedingly great joy, and they hadn't even seen the king yet. The star that they saw rise upon Christ's birth rose again to guide them. And propelled by their curiosity and wonder, they were basically exploding with delight at the final clue, knowing that it would lead them to the king. In verse 11, it says, on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Filled with intense joy, they bowed down and worshiped him. Their curiosity and wonder led them to truth, to love, to life, and it compelled them to drop to their faces in worship of a child, likely a toddler. Can you imagine? Just take a moment and wonder what it might have been like for the Magi to be in the presence of Jesus, the powerful presence of Emmanuel, God with us. The awe, the reverence. The next 5 words of the passage paint a picture of how deep their worship went. It says, then they opened their treasures. In my mind, I've always skipped to the 3 gifts that they offered, the gold, frankincense, and myrrh, which, regardless of the meaning or symbolism or use, are amazing and valuable. But before they presented their gifts, they opened their treasures. I think this paints a beautiful picture of their full submission to him. Open treasures. Their offering was part of their worship, and it began with open treasures. They offered their best. They offered their best to a king who had the world at his disposal, not because they were guilted or obligated, but because they were compelled to in worship. The gospel of Jesus elicited a response in the Magi: awe, reverence, submission. It was fear. But it was different from Herod's fear of losing power and control that led him to sin. It was different from the Jewish people's fear of immediate circumstances that led them to paralysis. It was fear of God that led the Magi to worship. You see, whatever you fear becomes the object of your worship, the recipient of your submission, the force that governs your decisions. Herod feared power. The people of Jerusalem feared comfort and safety. Many people fear money or the approval of others or position or status or change or perfection. Whatever you fear becomes the object of your worship, the recipient of your submission, and the force that governs your decisions. What do you fear? What consumes your thoughts? What influences your choices above all else? Where are your gifts going? Your time, your skills, your resources? The gospel of Jesus elicits a response, a choice. What do you fear? And what is it holding you back from? What is it leading you to? About a month ago, I was chatting with my friend Dave Shockey, who's one of the pastors at Campus House on Purdue campus. And I was sharing with him about my fear that I will do something wrong here, that I will upset or disappoint people. My whole life, the enemy has twisted my desire to do things right into a place of overanalyzing, of hypercritical self-doubt that puts me in one of two positions, either overdrive or paralysis. Ironically, in either place I land, when my fear is in doing things right, I tend to forget to include God in the process. Dave said to me, "Katrina, there's only one place we can put our fear. We cannot divide it. We either fear God or we fear something else." What do you fear? Fearing God is not a natural byproduct of becoming a Christian. Rather, it's a concerted decision to redirect your worship and submission to Him above all else. Fearing God is not a shift that you make once and settle in. It's a daily struggle against other things that fight for the throne in your life. A constant redirection every time your fear shifts to something else. The good news is that God is with us, Emmanuel, to help us redirect. And He invites each one of us, even in this very moment, to fear Him. Ask God to help you recognize where your allegiance lies. Release it and redirect it to Him. Psalm 86:1 says, "Teach me your way, Lord, that I may rely on your faithfulness. Give me an undivided heart that I may fear your name." Ask God to teach you His way, to remind you of His faithfulness, and to give you an undivided heart. The gospel of Jesus is for everyone, and it elicits a response. Fear God. Seek Him in wonder. Worship Him in awe, and open your treasure to offer Him your best gifts. Open treasure is symbolic of our fear of God, a picture of complete submission of all that we are and all that we have to offer, a willingness to give our best to His kingdom work, to trust Him to use our offerings as He sees fit. As an act of fearing God as a church, next week we're going to collect a special offering as part of our worship. An open treasure offering. In a moment, I'm going to have the servers pass out cards for this offering. On these cards, there is a place for your name and for your offering. Servers, would you guys go ahead and pass those out? What we are asking you to do is take one of these cards with you today. Spend this next week opening your treasure before the Lord, your skills, your resources, your heart, and ask Him what He wants you to offer Him. In particular, in this season of transition that we find ourselves in, it will take all of us, offering our open treasures to God. Maybe you have a specialized skill to offer, like graphic design or web design or interior design or sound design or math. I had to throw that in for balance and beauty. Maybe you have some time to offer, weekly, monthly, in the office, from your home. Maybe you have your service to offer, discipling someone, leading a pod, teaching or helping in River Kids, being a server, offering free childcare for pods. Maybe you have a financial gift to offer, even though it won't count towards your 2019 taxes. The possibilities are endless. The earth is your canvas. Actually, this little card is your canvas, but we can get you something bigger if you need it. Perhaps as you open your treasure, God is calling you to offer yourself, to share life in authentic community in a way that fear of something else has held you back from before. Perhaps God is calling you to offer your heart to Him. On Christmas Eve, during the children's moment, we heard about how the greatest gift we could offer Jesus is ourselves. This is where it begins. The gospel of Jesus is for everyone. His birth, His life, His death, and resurrection. If you want to hear more about this beautiful story, come and find me afterwards. We invite you to spend this next week with your treasure open before the Lord, prayerfully considering what you have to offer. Then next week, bring this card back filled out, and we will have a special collection of this open treasure offering as part of our worship. If it's a financial gift, you can bring that with your card as well. I can't help but be filled with intense joy as I look forward to the ways that God will reveal Himself to each of us this week as we seek Him with our treasures open. And the way that He will reveal Himself to all of us next week through this offering. The gospel of Jesus is for everyone. And it elicits a response. What will you fear? God invites us to open our treasures in worship. Let's pray. God, thank you for the curiosity and wonder of the Magi that compelled them to seek you. Thank you for your revelation to them, opening the gospel of Jesus to everyone. Help us to receive the good news for ourselves. Help us to stop creating new exclusions and prerequisites for others and welcome all with open arms. God, thank you that the gospel of Jesus is so powerful that it elicits a response in us, a choice of what or whom we will fear. I pray that you would meet us where we are in our current mess of misplaced fear and help us redirect our fear to you. And in this place of fear, God, help us to open our treasure to you in worshipful submission. Show each one of us what you are calling us to offer to you from our open treasure. Guide us, direct us. In Jesus' name, amen.